You know, I'm glad we live in Burbank because, you know, just a few miles down the road in Bell, you know,
Bell, California.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they ran another mayor out of town, or did the guy die or something?
One of the candidates passed away, and I don't know if you guys are aware of this, but they have this huge, huge scandal because a lot of the city council was being paid very close to $1 million a year, upwards of $500,000 for sure, and the city is destitute.
Each. Man, they're taken out of the till with both hands.
Yeah, and then they had a candidate who looked promising and died of a mysterious disease that was apparently suffering from.
What was it, mysterious anvil fall on the head or something like that?
Something like that. I don't know what's going on.
Well, it wasn't the newest guy, because I hear they picked somebody off the street.
Yeah, they have a new mayor, don't they?
Yeah, and there's not much information about him, but apparently he was just somebody they just popped in office really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Hola, hola. Hi, Super Rico. How are you doing?
Oh, muy bien. You can call me Your Honor now.
What?
I am now mayor. I am mayor of Bell.
Wait, you're the guy they picked as mayor of Bell?
See, I went down there last weekend for a taco, and then I met these guys in a car, and they said, "Do you want to be the mayor?"
Super Rico, what do you have around you there? What are you wearing?
They gave me a sash. See, it says mayor. I am the mayor of Bell.
That says mejor, M-E-J-O-R, Suprica.
That's not how you spell mayor. It's a Spanish word. You should know that. It's mejor. It means best.
See, I'm the best.
What is that, a piece of tape on it?
See?
Yeah, it's like they taped something else over it. It's like, wait a minute, there's another word here. It's tamales mejor. Superica, I think they just took off like a billboard and wrapped it around you. I don't think that's a formal sash. I think you're being used. I think you're a political tool.
Well, tool or not, congratulations, Superica.
See, I hope to do the job to which I was appointed by criminals.
I hope you are appointed the same salary as some of those guys.
See?
Welcome back to Almost Live with Paul and Misty and Ezra and Emily.
Radio Rashi, we call it now.
Oh, that's right. I keep forgetting Radio that Rashi. We changed the name.
Yeah.
Well, Radio Rashi, I mean, that's a good name for the station and everything. And, you know, I'm hoping to get more content up here at some point, you know, and maybe a little merchandise and stuff like that. We're looking into other things and ways of broadening the site. We're on iTunes now, which is good.
Yes. Yeah.
And so, my love, what are you up to? Auditioning and
I've only done like one audition really this week because I've been so busy. I'm taking agent meetings this week, and I'm very, very happy to say that I've had 5 agent meetings.
Wow.
So now I have some decisions to make, and I'm really, really happy. It's stressful.
You're going about it the right way. Usually when I get an agent, it's sort of like, psst, bud. Hey, you want me to rep you?
Yeah, they open they open their jacket and reveal his contract.
It's like, well, that sounds okay to me.
You're at a point now in your career where most people who are going to hire you know who you are, so they can just call Susan, our lawyer.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you're not like me, whereas I'm kind of like out there doing the cheerleading, like, hey, I exist. And people are like, oh, hey, you do, you know?
Yeah.
You're kind of like, they know who you are.
But you're on 2 shows. I mean, you've done recurring roles on 2 animated series and video games.
Yeah.
And mocap
2 video
games
now and 1 mocap. And,
a ton of commercials. And a couple of commercials. Yeah, things are trucking for you.
Yeah.
So. And now it's time for you to have an agent to just be out there pounding on doors. So.
Yeah, well, I mean, the nice thing is, and I think the only reason that I got the meetings, because agent meetings, frankly, are very hard to get.
Yeah.
You know, however, I'm bringing in a series, and which we can't talk about, but I'm bringing in an animated series, and I'm bringing in a resume, and I'm bringing in some contacts, because I'm constantly at these workshops for voiceover. So I'm really lucky, you know, first of all, A, that we can afford it.
Right.
But B, to have the opportunity and live in Los Angeles and be able to meet all these great casting directors from Nickelodeon and Disney and Cartoon Network, and they come in and they get to hear you, and you're ready for them to hear you or you're not. And I'm happy to say that I'm at the point where I'm competitive, so I am bringing something to an agency instead of just coming in saying, well, gosh, I hope we can get my career going, because it's going. And I think that's just the case with an actor who really wants to work. It's surprising where the opportunities come from.
Right. You said you're lucky that we can afford it. And the reason for that is, like, you know, we've made a commitment to budget for that. And, and that's what any actor or performer does, you know, when they move to Los Angeles, or writer too. You know, you have to kind of be saving and work up a bit of a grub stake so you can...
Well, and you also have to be selective about which opportunities you, A, create for yourself, and B, you pursue.
Right.
Because there are tons of workshops and there's tons of voiceover stuff. However, I know where I'd like to work.
Right.
And so I go to the workshops for the casting directors with whom I'd really like to meet and with whom I'd really like to work. And if I weren't ready and I hadn't studied with Bob Bergen and Richard Horvitz and Greg Berger and Nancy Wolfson and Bill Holmes and all these other people...
And Robert Edwards for singing.
Yeah. Yep. And Marty Nixon.
Yes.
You know, if I didn't have all this education under my belt and frankly, all this improv, because improv is huge.
Yeah, Second City improv.
Well, it makes it easy for you to turn on a dime, which you have to do in animation.
Right.
There's no way that I would be building a resume at all. And so you really have to be selective and
judicious. Yeah, we got to give some shot. I guess we should give some props to Eddie Gordetsky, who a couple of years ago recommended improv. Said first that it would help you, you know, with comedy and everything. Mm-hmm. Would help your magic and everything, and it did.
It really did. It changed really my life. Yeah. You know, so Eddie, you know, willing or not, has been quite a mentor. And he has several times, you know, he's taken a look at material that I'm working on. And with two sentences, he makes it 100% better.
Yep.
Because he's so good at what he does. And he knows his stuff inside and out.
Yep.
Yeah. So now that is not what we were going to talk about. What do you want to talk about, anything that you're doing, or can you?
I don't know. We just got on a roll with what we're doing. And what am I doing? I'm, you know, doing the same old stuff, cartoons and comics and just a ton of writing. Things come up on a daily basis. And somebody called me the other day and said, do you have a short story in you for a Superman comic? And it's like, no, thank you, though. And then about 10 minutes after hanging up the phone, yes, okay, that would be a good idea. All right, well, and so, you know, working on that. It just things all the time, you know. And one of my coworkers on a project that I really can't talk about said, don't get too busy. And I said, oh, all right. But things are coming up all the time. I know everybody wants to know about Tower Prep. Patience. All I can say is patience. And I'll leave it at that. Things are hopeful. So very hopeful. Anyway, and believe me, nobody wants to be announcing good news more than I do.
Mm-hmm.
So, and speaking of some good news, your folks...
I have a brother.
Yes.
Finally, aww. After all these years, I begged my mother for a brother, even to the point where this is gross, but I'm going to tell you anyways, even to the point where when she had a hysterectomy, I said, have him give me your uterus in a jar, and that will be my brother. I will name it Steven. And she was like, you're disgusting. And
were you
going to
clone the baby out of the uterus, or you just, the uterus was the baby?
Well, the uterus would have been my brother. Well, I would take it places, and they told me I was sick, and it would turn gray in the formaldehyde, and they weren't going to give it to me.
You could put a little sailor cap on top of the jar.
You are exactly right.
Yeah.
But no, I was not allowed that opportunity. And
call
so,
him Jughead, you know, kind
no,
of fits.
Steven.
Oh, Steven, all right. Okay.
But anyway, they wouldn't let me have that. So instead, my parents got a dog.
Yeah.
They said they were suffering empty nest syndrome.
Oh,
now that my
everybody's moved
gone.
Out. Yeah.
Yeah. So they went out and got a little dog, and he's a schnoodle, and his name is Shadow.
A schnoodle is a
schnauzer poodle.
Schnauzer poodle, mm-hmm. Yes. Shadow.
And they rescued him from a local pound, and they said he was stinky. And just so sweet. And the pound put them in a private room. And the dog just jumped up in my dad's lap and cuddled in. And my dad said, that's my dog.
Yeah, your dad.
They just knew. And so we sent him a little pillow and a blanket, which my father promptly put on the best recliner in their house, which Shadow has now claimed for his. So there is a dog pillow and a dog blanket on the chair now. And I sent him a dog bed as well, because we love to spoil our pups.
Right.
And my dad called and said, he doesn't need this bed. And I said, why? He said, he sleeps in ours. And my mom said, well, save it for me, because I might be in there sooner than later.
So. No, that's great. That's
great.
And, you know, I think just about everybody in our combined family, well, I don't know if your sister has a pet. You know, I don't.
Not right now.
You
know,
like
they said eventually they have fish, but they're at my folks' house.
Oh, okay.
But you know, my sister said eventually they'd like to get a dog, but they want to wait until they're kind of settled. You know, they just moved.
Pretty much everybody in our families though has pets. My sister has Izzy the beagle.
Mm-hmm.
And
your brother has the Rhodesian Ridgeback.
Rhodesian Ridgeback.
What is that?
I love
dog's
Rhodesian
name?
Ridgeback.
Oh,
I used to
boy,
have a mix
Archie.
Of one.
Archie,
and he's huge. You could ride that dog. I mean, they use those for hunting lions in Africa. And,
my word.
Yeah, Archie is just really rambunctious and everything.
Their hair goes in the opposite direction when they get angry or riled up.
I mean, he lives in Carmel Valley, and he could easily use that for running down mountain lion and wild boars and bobcats and everything, but it's... You know, Archie's just a big old goof. You'll meet him in a week or two when we're up there for my brother's getting married.
Your youngest brother doesn't have a dog though.
Oh, he doesn't. I guess they haven't gotten a pet yet.
And my sister doesn't have one. So not and your mom doesn't have one.
My mom hates pets. I mean, well, she doesn't hate them. She does not. She likes them fine as long as they leave. You know, as long as they don't stay in the house.
Well, so. And, you know, as long as they don't crap on their floor, like we told you Muggsy did that one time they visited. It was horrifying.
My dad has Zorro, the little, I think he's a Scottie or a Schnauzer. A Schnauzer, I think, yeah.
Okay.
Little black Schnauzer. Adorable.
Aww.
And, pets are great. And, of course, we have Muggs and Dukes.
Mm-hmm.
And Rashi has Hobart, who kind of defies description.
Yes.
I mean, you know, that thing's been living in the house for, 4 years now? Mm-hmm. And I don't even know where he got it. Where's Rashi? Rashi?
Oh, I'll tell you where it came from. Yeah. We're out walking one day, and this thing came up and latched himself onto Super Rika's arm and started to rip him open.
See,
and
it was
I said, I like your style, and I brought him home.
Ouch. It still hurts.
Oh, geez.
Well, yeah,
they get along better now.
Yeah.
He doesn't really bother Super Rika all that much now that Super Rika knows what to feed him. You know, the wallaby shipments that we have coming.
It's weird. We go down to the pet store and, you know, there's all these stacks of, you know, dog food, you know, dog, cat. And then there's like one sack that just says wallaby on it. Mm-hmm. And we have to go down there like 3 or 4 times a year and buy a sack of wallaby kibble for the thylacine. You know, Rashi, what part of town did you find him in? Where exactly was he?
6 hours from here, shut up.
That's all he says. It's a mystery how this came to be, how he came to be part of the family. But
small, little known, little Australia downtown.
Yeah, little Australia down. Yeah, probably down near little Iceland and little Belize.
Yeah, a guy had to open his jacket.
Yeah, hey, bud, look what I got.
Yeah.
You know, it's
my dad's agent.
Yeah. Oh, you got him. You got him from Swifty, my old agent. Huh? Oh, there you go. Yeah, it's kind of curious because most people claim the thylacine went extinct in 1936 when the last one died in a zoo. But actually, they backdated that because up until like the late 80s, people were still seeing. I saw one in 1985.
Yeah.
I was hiking in Tasmania and I got a quick glimpse of one. So, you know, I wouldn't go that they died out in the 30s because I reported to a ranger and he like grilled me for hours. And then finally he said, just don't talk about it. Just don't tell people.
And here you are in a public forum letting out the goop.
Well, I'm not saying where I saw it, but you know.
You just said you saw it in Tasmania.
Well, Tasmania is a big place. Oh, it's not huge, but it's you know, I'm not saying exactly where it was.
All right.
I still remember where it was, but still, it is curious. So I guess Rashi would not be content with a bowl of goldfish or a turtle or something.
No.
He had to get the most exotic, rarest animal on the planet.
Of course.
Yeah.
Just if it's not a dodo bird. So you've had some interesting pets. You had a little guy named Baron for a while.
Baron. Baron was a golden retriever, and he was a great dog. He was walking home. I had to walk home from school when I was in, I don't know, 4th or 5th grade.
Mm-hmm.
And I walked across town. I lived in Orinda, California, which is up near Berkeley. And it was a nice walk from the bus station over a golf course to my house. And this golden retriever just started walking with me one day. And he's just real friendly dog and just real, you know, wanted to be petted and everything.
He didn't have a collar on?
I think he did, but he just followed me home. And I don't remember if he did or not, you know. It's a long time ago, but I took him home and I said, isn't he wonderful? Can he stay with us? And I think he stayed the night. And then I think he must have had a collar because we called the people who were looking for him. But I was real sad to see him go. And a few months later, they called up and said, you know, we're moving and your kid liked the dog a lot. Would you like him? And
it's nice.
Oh, so Baron got to live with us full time, you know. So he came and he was like my dog while I was growing up. And he was real sweet. So I had him all through junior high school and high school. He passed away while I was away at school.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Like Ian's dog in Tower Prep.
So that's where that came from.
Well, a little bit.
But. Now, you said Baron used to put his face on the table.
Oh, yeah. Day. Yeah. Well, Baron had a real act going when it came to dinner. Like, Baron would move up on the food by degrees. We had a big round table in our kitchen, and Baron would come up, and he'd kind of, like, go over to the edge of the table, like, one eyebrow would go up and the other eyebrow would go up, and when no one was complaining, he'd put his head on the table, you know, and look around, still safe. And then he'd kind of put his head over near me, kind of like like that, you know, like snickering like a Hanna-Barbera dog. And then he'd get a little closer, like palling up, and then he'd just eat whatever I had on the plate. It's all good. You know, if nobody was shooing him away, he felt like he could go for the chicken or the meatloaf or whatever we were having.
That's
that
really
night.
Funny.
Yeah, but he was great. Unfortunately, he was very... He had bad allergies, and he was sort of allergic to himself, if that makes any sense. He would get pollen in his coat, and he would just like rip out hunks of his fur. So we would put him on medicine, but nothing ever seemed to help. So he passed away while I was at school. That was traumatic.
You mentioned that.
Yeah.
Way to relive it twice in one podcast.
Well, I don't know. I just
Was that not
repeating myself? I'm repeating myself.
Ezra and Emily both looked at me like, "Oh my god!"
Well, I do.
That was a long time ago.
Well, there is something else I knew. I should say about him. Like, we live close to a golf course, and our neighbors, the O'Briens, actually back to Rhodesian Ridgebacks. They raised Rhodesian Ridgebacks, and they had a dog named Ondo, who was this big male dog. And Ondo and Baron were like pals. They would get together and they would play together. And Ondo hated adults, loved kids, and liked other dogs if they were as big as he was. And so we would take Baron and Ondo onto the greens at night. You're not really supposed to walk around on the golf course because it's a private golf club, but, you know, we would do it anyway. And the hunting instinct would rear up in these dogs. There'd be deer grazing on the golf course, and the dogs would actually go after the deer and they would run them down.
Whoa.
And they would jump on them and bring them down. And then they kind of lost the hunting instinct. Then they would kind of like look at the deer and look at each other like, did you bring a can opener? It's like, I don't know what to do now. And so they let the deer up and then they would walk off and then they start chasing it again. You know, they knew they should chase it and bring it down, but they didn't really know how to eat it.
Yeah.
So
that's kind of sick.
Well, you know, and also we would have to call them back. I mean, this is us yelling at the dogs, like, leave the deer alone. And eventually what happened was they put up a fence so that we couldn't get easy access.
I don't know, it begs the question, why would you continue to go back to the green when you knew that your dog was running down deer and you were yelling after it?
Well,
unless you enjoyed seeing it happen.
No, we didn't have any control over it. We would go there to walk the dogs, and the greens were really nice, and there were these hills, and we'd go on at night when all the golfers were done playing. It was only very rarely we would see a deer. It wasn't like we would go out there.
Oh, I thought this
like,
was a regular occurrence, like, and I was like, dude,
let's go run down some
deer
and laugh at them. No, you know, it was... okay, they shouldn't have been off-leash, but, you know, this was some years back, and, you know, out in the country, so we figured they could, you know, get away with it. So.
Well, you're very sniffy. And you got sniffy last night at Ruth's and she asked you if you were allergic to kitty. Do you want to talk about Richard's kitten that used to call you on the phone?
Oh, Eustacia.
What?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. What did you say? I staged you?
No, Eustacia was the cat's
Eustacia
name.
Oh, Eustacia was the... Oh.
Yeah, this is turning into wild animal, domesticated animals I have known. There have been some really good ones over the years. When I was going to Emerson College, I lived a couple of semesters in the dorms, and then a couple of semesters I roomed with some guys over near Cambridge in a big old house. I shared a house with a fellow named Richard Howell, who's a comic book artist and writer.
A very
and
fine one, by
publisher.
The way. He does
yeah.
the Deadbeats book.
He does Deadbeats comics. He does
a relation to Thurston Howell?
No, not really. But he's for a while, he drew for Marvel. He drew The Vision and Scarlet Witch, a miniseries for Marvel.
And the Elvira comics.
And the Elvira comics for Claypool Comics and things like that. And those have gone online now. But he and I roomed together when I was going to college. And he ran the Million Year Picnic, which was the name of the local comic book store in Harvard Square. It's still there. And
he ran it? Is that what you said?
Yeah, he was the manager of the store. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. Thursday night, the new comics would come in. So we would all troop down there. And I'd meet up with Richard and his girlfriend, Carol Kaler. And we'd read new comics and we'd go off to dinner, and you know, it was great. It was a fun time.
Tell us about Eustacia.
Eustacia was Richard's cat, who was a little black and white tuxedo cat who had the most personality of any cat. She was very distinguished, very smart, could be affectionate if she wanted to be. Sometimes she would take a swat at you, as you know, she would be occasionally would want to. But she was very tricky also, and she loved to watch me cook, because on the off chance I might drop anything. And anything fell on the floor was hers. And she would just shoot away with it really quick. There was no getting food back from Eustacia. And she realized that when the phone rang, there was a phone in the living room. We didn't have one in the kitchen. I would have to leave the kitchen, walk down the hallway, and go to the living room and answer the phone. And that was her chance. So literally, one time I was in there. I was fixing some chicken, and I had some chicken in a cellophane package from the market. Phone rang, and I didn't think anything about it. Went down to answer the phone. And I look over, and Eustacia is running down the hall with the chicken, dragging it, and runs under the bed. And I said to whoever I was talking to, oh, God damn it, the cat's got the chicken. And I had to put it down and reach under the bed, and I almost lost my hand because, you know, she nearly took it off at the wrist. Richard always maintained that, you know, my signature was really scrawly, and that Eustacia could imitate the signature by dipping her claw in ink. And so he was convinced that Eustacia was going out and running up a lot of bills buying cat toys and paying for it with my checks.
And you can't return them because they got slobber all over them.
Of course. Well, and what was really most interesting about this story was that once Eustacia realized that he had to go to answer the phone, he started getting a lot of crank calls and was convinced that Eustacia had a cordless underneath the bed and was calling him down the hallway. And as soon as he was down there, she was like, "Ching!" And for as long as it would take him to realize there was no one on the other end, she could get back under the bed with the chicken.
Yeah,
and I just hear a voice on the other end going, peep. Because she didn't meow like other cats. She would just come up and go, peep, like that. And some nights I'd be asleep and she'd hop up on the bed. And, you know, it's like, oh, the cat's here. You know, a cat can cuddle down, go to sleep. Sometimes she'd come up and go right next to my ear, peep. You know, and it's like, strangest noise ever. Peep. You know, cat made wonderful little noises. So she wasn't really my cat, but, you know, she, you know, shared the same space for a while. What about yourself? Any memorable pets? You had Teddy, who bit everybody who came in.
Teddy bit everyone, but only on the way out of the house.
Yeah.
He would let anybody in the house, and he'd be good, and he'd snuggle with you, and as you were leaving, he'd bite you on the ass. Everyone.
Never bit me.
No.
Sad that you're leaving.
No, he was very old and near death when you met him, though.
Yeah, I always would reach down and give him a little pat on a cuddle behind the ears and stuff. I think maybe once he kind of like did a nip on my shoe, but it was only like affectionate because he knew I was leaving.
It was never affectionate. Well, he was the meanest guy.
Then he was weakened and he wasn't able to do it.
And then we had Tiffany, who saved my sister. My sister was climbing a very tall fence and the dog jumped on her. She was an old English sheepdog and jumped on her and was pulling her down off the fence. And my dad ran out and was furious. And my mom came out and said, I mean, my sister was like 2 and a half. She was way too young to be climbing this giant cyclone fence. And my mom said, Stan, she pulled her off the fence. She saved our daughter from getting, and you know, she knew she wasn't supposed to be doing that.
Yeah, she could have fell from farther.
And so she was, you know, rewarded for that. And then we had Shazbots, who was a little Cocker Spaniel, who I had when I was very
That was
little.
Your first dog, right?
I don't remember him very well.
Yeah.
And we had Mopsy, who loved to put her nose in inappropriate places and greet all our guests, only strangers.
Your dog's name was Shazbot? Like, Shazbots. Named after the...
Nanu.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
The, the Orkin word of surprise or displeasure.
Yeah. Okay, just making sure.
Oh, yeah. I did not stutter. That was my dad. Name that one. Yeah, and then we had Mopsy, we had Teddy. Now, that's it. I mean, I had a snake named Sergeant.
Was he in the magic act?
No, I was a little girl. I was 11, 10 or 11. And I always hated earthworms for whatever reason. I don't know. Mm-hmm. They just grossed me out. I used to have dreams, like, because I had to go out and hunt worms for the snake. And what better way to get over being bogged out by worms than to have to go pull them out of the ground and feed them to your snake?
Sure.
And I used to have dreams that I was, like, puking them up. You know, like, I had a throat full of worms, and it was like, oh. And I thought, oh, my God, what is this? I got to get rid of this animal.
Yeah.
And so we ended up letting it go back in the wild where we found it. My dad found it and brought it home. But the saddest thing is I got another snake. They kept finding these garter snakes and bringing them to me. Like, I'm the snake lady, and I'm like 11.
Here, have some snakes. Here, have a snake.
Here. Daughter, I know you love a snake. And I was like, yeah, I love this snake. It's awesome. But it always smelled like topsoil because that's just what they smell like. And then I got another little snake and put him in the same cage. And that was an error because the big one ate the little one.
Oh, yeah.
And that I did not know was going to happen.
Yeah.
And so I was like, oh, no, Sam got out. And they said, no, there's some bones. Sam didn't make it.
Oh, boy.
I was like, oh, my God, that's
awful. Yeah,
sometimes
I get confused. Even Emily's snake was starting to bite its own tail just because it smelled food and it was right after eating and such. Oh, wait, I'm not food.
Oh, wow. Well, so they're not right.
Aggressive snake, though.
Yeah.
King snake.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they're aggressive. Yeah, no, these were just little garter snakes, and they were cute. And I liked him a lot. I could handle him and take him outside, and all the little boys in the neighborhood were like, that's so awesome that you have a snake. And I was like, yeah, he's all right. If you feed him some worms, you can have him. You know, because you don't really bond with a snake. Yeah. And I guess you could if you give it a personality.
Some people do,
but
I was like when, you know, reptiles, I sort of drew the line at reptiles. And not because I didn't like them. I just sort of appreciated them when I saw them in the wild or something.
Yeah.
Like I just really wanted a ball python or something like that.
I just don't know that I could ever trust, especially a large snake that could eat you.
Yeah.
You know, like a big giant boa constrictor. Yeah. And it's like, you know, you see people put them around their necks and, you know, they drape them on their arms like a feather boa, you know, which is where they come from.
Yeah.
And you just, no. And there's nothing wrong with it. I would gladly hold a snake like that.
Right.
But I would not lie around and watch television.
I don't know. No. And I'm probably going to get some flack for it because, you know, like people say, oh, my snake, my python, my boa constrictor is very affectionate and everything.
Affectionate?
But it's like, do they understand?
Because it coils around you and squeezes you like a hug.
Well, how affectionate are snakes, you know, with each other? I mean, you know, you see dogs, you'll see wolves go up and act affectionate toward each other, and foxes, canines, and mountain lions and things like that. But I've never seen snakes, you know, just sort of, you know, scampering together together and being affectionate. I don't think affection is really, you know.
I just don't know enough about them. They're still mysterious I don't know to either, me, you know? Whereas, so, I mean, it could be that snakes actually truly are affectionate, you know? But, I mean, some people would say, well, it's giving me a kiss with its tongue. And it's like, no, it's smelling you.
Yeah.
You know? So I guess you can find affection wherever you're looking for it. And again, if you give it a voice and a personality, or it seems to have a personality, or it's sassy, you know? Like, Sergeant was constantly escaping his cage. He should have been named Houdini.
Yeah, that's what Emily says about her snake. Is very much a Houdini snake. It loves getting out, right?
Really smart.
Staring at the tank going, you're not actually in there. Oh, you're on the outside. How did you get there?
Well, at least you can find it. My great-grandmother once, she hated that snake so much it really creeped her out. And Granny lived with us for a little while. And I noticed that my snake got out because I used to have to put my radio on top of the aquarium because he learned how to push it up and would get out. So I'd have to keep a weight on there. And I was using my radio for something and forgot to replace the weight. And I mean, I was a kid. It's a mistake, but he got out.
Yeah.
And I couldn't find him anywhere. And we tore the house apart. And my dad finally said, you know what? He's probably in the heat register. And I'm sorry. I think you probably lost a pet. Either he got outside, because it was the middle of the summer. Mm-hmm. And he said either he got outside and he's going to be fine. Or he's gone in somewhere and we'll find out where he is when he can't eat. You know, we'll find him eventually. And I'm sorry. You know, so I grieved and I lost it. And then all of a sudden, one afternoon, my grandmother was going back and forth from Texas and was shipping her clothes in large boxes. And she's getting a sweater because it was like that turn of August to September.
Sure.
And he'd been gone about 2 weeks. Yeah. Enough time for me to grieve and like process the fact that he was gone. And all of a sudden, this blood-curdling scream comes out of Granny's room. And she goes, whoa, put this in here! And the thing had gone into the side, like the hand holes of her box, and was coiled up so sweet inside one of her sweaters. And she threw him on the floor, and she's like ready to stomp on him. And I'm like, no. And he was fine. Oh. But it was just, out of all the people in the house, he went right to the person who was terrified of him.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
My dad's friend, Brian, whom you met.
Sure.
Had, I don't know if it was a python or a boa constrictor. It was a big snake, whatever it was.
Okay.
And it got out. And they were concerned, and like to the point where the police were looking for it, because it was very, very large. And this was back a long time ago, apparently, when police had nothing better to do.
Right.
And they couldn't find it anywhere. And this woman, 3 or 4 houses down, opened her coat closet. And she went to get a coat, and there was a snake hanging on the bar. Just whoop, that's where they found
it. That's where it was hung up to dry. Or
it was just like, this is better than anywhere else I could find. Can I live with you, lady? And she's like, no. But it's so interesting how they find this. Okay, so we've talked about my dogs and my snake, and I think and my parents have a little sparrow that they saved. It had been thrown out of its nest, and its neck was twisted. And my mom said, you know what, let's just try to straighten him out and feed him, you know. So they fed him with an eyedropper, or with a little dropper that you can get at the pet food store, and they made they ground up some meal for him, and he lived. And they've had him for
5 years. Four or five years, yeah.
At least 5 years. And he just, you know, Rufio,
yeah,
he just lives in a little cage in the office, and then they let him out. He just flies around the house, and
nice little bird.
Goes to the bathroom all over the house. You know, disgusting. But he's a cute bird. He's very well mannered, and he'll sit on your shoulder and sing. And, well, not really sing. He just kind of makes noises.
We had parakeets, you know, when I was a kid and everything, but I never really. And I like birds. I like the idea of birds. And I like, you know, going to the zoo or aviary or the pet store and seeing parrots and things like that. But I've never really... I always thought a parrot or an exotic bird would be too much of a commitment for me. Maybe if we had a farm, you know, ducks or something, or swans or something.
I was talking to Wally Wingert today.
Yeah,
And he's getting ducks in his pool in the backyard.
Really?
And he's trained them. He opens the door and does a Donald Duck voice, and they all know that means food.
Really?
And so whenever he opens his back window and does Donald, the ducks all come across the pool, and they know that it's time to eat, and he's got a treat for
them.
That
is almost the coolest thing.
Isn't that so cool?
And next time we go over there, they'll be wearing little sailor hats and spats and top hats.
Of course, I said, okay, Wally. Yeah. And I said, all of a sudden, they're having conversation with you. You find out one of them wrote an episode of Star Trek. They're there watching movies every Saturday night. And he goes, it's on my list.
I trained the oldest one to swim in money.
This is Wally Wingert we're talking about. Right. The guy makes a lot of dough.
Like red, green, and blue, because he's Donald, so they all have to be Huey, Dewey, and Louie.
Yeah.
Of course. Yeah.
I don't know. There was like one time, like my dad has one of those cockatiels over at his house. The little
Those little birds.
Little cockatiels. Uh-huh. But
they had a yellow one and a black and white one, like a gray and white one. Right?
Yeah. And that's fine. I'm just not a bird person. I remember years ago, this was back in the mid 80s, I was going... I was up for a job in New York, and they really wanted me in. And there were two jobs, and I went with the one that kept me on the West Coast. But they really wanted me to come to New York, and I was actually to the point of where I had gone to New York to look around for an apartment, just on the off chance that, you know, I decided on this job. So I looked at a bunch of places. And as I'm going through the village, I come to this pet store, and they have exotic birds there. And I'm thinking, well, you know, maybe if I get an apartment, I'll get an exotic birds. Maybe I'll get an exotic bird. And I walk in, and they had a toucan.
Do they have a cassowary?
No, I would have, oh God, are you kidding? Not only would I have bought it, I would have rode it home. I would have rode it cross country, and that thing would have made it in about 4 days.
Yeah, by itself after it eviscerated you with its giant claw.
Oh, the cassowary, man. Okay, we'll talk about the cassowary in a second, but the...
no, we won't.
Well,
go ahead.
This guy, we'll talk about evisceration. This guy is...
No, we won't talk about that either. Tell your story, please.
This guy had a toucan, in a cage.
Uh-huh.
And it was beautiful, black and white, you know, with a multicolored bill.
You
just
were
like,
on about getting one of those just like a couple years ago. You wanted a toucan.
I like that. You know, as a kid, I ate a lot of Fruit Loops. You know, and I would see the toucan.
But it's not the same. They just sit in there and scream.
I know, and they don't talk, regardless of... Well, the very first Fruit Loops commercials, they actually made it like it could talk. You know, they had a real... Instead of Toucan Sam, they had a real toucan moving its beak.
Oh, that's
and then they would do a fun... I think Mel Blanc did a funny voice. So I said, I want a toucan because it's got a huge nose and it talks. And then I was told, no, they don't really talk and they don't really ask for Fruit Loops. So I go in, but I want to look at this bird anyway. The guy's telling me what a wonderful bird it is. It's been affection trained and hand trained since birth. And would I like to look at it? And the guy puts his arm in here and it tore his arm. It started tearing at his arm and flapping and starting to turn its bill sideways. And he's going, it's a lovely bird. It's hand raised, affection raised. It's starting to take chunks out of his ear.
Oh my God. It's,
you know,
it sounds like that Holy Grail.
I can offer it for you.
Dead parrot.
Yeah, you know? Pretty much. You know, it's like,
no, it isn't.
It's $1,400. And it's like, $1,400. And I don't know how much to get stitched up after you play with it.
Exactly.
So every once in a while, I'll see one in the zoo and go, boy, that's a good looking bird. But I guess the lesson here is just let it, you know, if you can't
let it live,
I've been to people's homes where they've had exotic birds and really took care of them, like Scarlet Macaws. Yes.
Scorpio had Flash, the magician.
The cockatoo,
is a funny
yeah.
name for a magician. It's for those of you who don't, you know, not like privy to magic lingo, to flash is like to expose how the trick is done. Like if you're doing the trick and people can see the method, it's called flashing.
Right.
Okay. You know, also if you are not wearing anything under a trench coat and open the trench
yes.
coat,
that
you're
is
exposing.
Not... Yeah. Unique to magician.
Yeah.
But anyway, funny that a magician would have a bird named Flash.
Yeah.
What kind of bird was he?
Cockatoo. He was a white cockatoo from Australia.
And that bird, you could totally see the dinosaur in it.
Yeah.
It was big enough where it would sit on your shoulder and you go, whoo-hoo, you're powerful. And it was sweet and very affectionate. And it would sit on your shoulder and kind of pick at your hair a little bit. And I couldn't handle him for more than 30, 45 seconds because I kept having visions of my eyeball going with it.
Yeah.
And I was just like, oh, I love him. I don't trust him. I'll feed him. I don't want him on my face. You know?
Yeah.
But Scorpio was so... He was so gentle with it, and he's so good with all of his animals. And he does an entire bird show.
Yeah.
Roland James, I think, is what he's going by now.
Oh, really?
And he's working like crazy with a ton of birds.
With doves and Flash.
He does doves, and he's got Flash, and he had a little asshole bird. I don't remember its name.
Oh, the asshole bird. Yes, that's...
Asshole. He bought this bird.
Is that
and
the scientific
it was,
name?
Yeah, I think so. Asshole, assholeus.
Anus assholeus.
Yes. Avius. Is that what you said? Avius assholeus?
Anus assholeus.
Oh, I said avis. Like
anus assholeus.
Yeah,
although that bird really is an asshole.
Yeah. Well, so was his. I mean,
right.
This little bird was just a jerk.
Oh.
And he couldn't keep it in a cage. It would, I mean, it was literally like Superman. It would
yeah.
be in the cage and he would come in to say hi to it and the bars were bent. And the bird was out. And
wow.
he was like, how did you do this? And the bird's like, bitch, I know how to use a tool. And it was just like, the bird was a jerk. And he would try to pick it up and it would prefer to walk on the floor by itself. It wouldn't fly because it was too stuck up to fly. And it was like, F all y'all.
Yeah,
and it
I'm
would get
proud.
On the floor and it would up its tail and turn its head and walk away. And like, just try to pick me up. And if you tried to pick it up, it would bite you.
Yeah.
That bird was a jerk. So Ezra and Emily, we're kind of wrapping up. So do you guys have any pets? You've talked about
she has a menagerie.
Yeah.
Right now I have a lot. Mostly I just have lizards and stuff because
nice.
I can keep them in an apartment.
Uh-huh.
So I have my snake. I think I mentioned little king snake. And then I have
his name's York.
York?
York.
Of course it
yeah.
is. Oh, Yorick.
Yeah.
Alas.
Yeah.
Oh, of course.
And there's also an homage to Why the Last Man and the Houdini references too.
Very nice.
Oh, yeah.
I was
Very
reading
nice.
It when I got him.
Yeah.
Okay. And then I have a gecko, which geckos I found are the most amazing lizards.
Why?
Just the way that they crawl upside down, and they're some of them are really friendly. The one I have now is kind of a jerk.
Jerky he's, pets. Man.
She's just private.
Well, those.
She's private.
You see the what geckos? Does
she have her Facebook? Like, don't come in here. Yeah, she's like kissing pictures much. Of Zac Efron under a rock, and she's like, don't look at me.
Geckos, you see those? Random, you see those it? All over in Hawaii. You know, like they, you and you hear them like chirping and making noise at night in Hawaii. And mm-hmm.
Well, and if you have a screened-in porch, you know, you'll turn on the light and it's like lizards everywhere.
Oh, literally! Like I would do that at my uncle's house in Hawaii. I would turn off the lights and then I turn it on like a second later. There'd be about five of them pressed up against the screen. You know, yeah, it was up and.
Where were we? At Cibolo Creek. There was one in our room.
Yeah, that's right.
Remember
that's
in
right.
our hotel room?
Yeah, yeah.
That was the room with the pink Pepto-Bismol yeah. squirting scorpion.
And the tarantula.
Remember that? Oh, it's a tarantula. Enough with the tarantula.
Oh,
forgot
man.
About that.
Those nights in Sumatra when I was hiking, I'd stay in these little huts. I would turn off the light or blow out the light in some cases if it was a kerosene lamp. And I'd lie in bed like rigid because I'd hear, you know, like the legions of the damned slithering under the bed. You know, literally slithering, crawling, things on claws just like under the bed. And
skittering.
Skittering.
Oh, skittering is the creepiest. Skittering. Skitter
could be anything from a large rodent to...
Oh, yeah.
You know, at night, I wouldn't sleep. I would just listen and try to
turn on the lights, and there's like a huge snake and a capybara just tinking teacups underneath your bed.
It was, but the night.
Well, capybara would be Brazil, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But at not, the middle of the night, I would be woken up by roaring from tigers out in the jungle.
Well, you said you were having a dream that there were explosions.
Yeah. One night I was having this dream that there was furnaces exploding all around me because it was so hot. And they were just going off. And then I realized it was a tiger roaring outside, and it was so hot. And the next morning, I woke
outside
up
outside his hut. Single thin-walled aluminum
yeah,
hut.
Exactly.
Are
yeah.
you safe? No, you're not.
And then in the morning, I was woken up by this thing crashing on the roof, and it was an orangutan jumping up and down on the
tin
roof.
Of course it was. Just like home.
Yeah, and that brings me to the easiest pet I've ever owned, which was the coyote.
Mm-hmm. Well, you didn't own him.
No, I didn't. He came with a house.
He owned you.
He did.
He came with a house. I was renting a house from a friend in the Hollywood Hills, and this coyote. Built or dug himself a burrow underneath the little shed where there was a pool filter. And he'd come out every night and like look around, what's up? And
you'd roll him an egg.
And I'd roll him an egg and he'd eat it. And then I got to the point where I actually went out and I bought him a dish and I wrote his name on it. I called him Kelso because at the time I was writing the Mutant Texas comic and the leader of this gang of coyotes was called Kelso. And he's actually kind of a scummy character. Well, coyotes are kind of scummy. Mm-hmm. But I would give him a lot. I would fill it up with kibble and I'd leave it out for him. He'd come over and he'd eat it up real quickly and look at me really suspiciously. And he was never friendly. But occasionally, like, I would, like, be in the pool, like reading comics on an inner tube or something. And he'd come down and he'd watch me or he'd come out. One time I was grilling a pheasant, you know, I was cooking a pheasant for some
Gross.
Reason. And actually a few of them. And he came by because the barbecue was going and I threw him half a pheasant and he just ate it, bones and all, and ran away. Uh-huh. But that was about as close as we ever got. Occasionally, like, I'd come in from a long night, you know, and be like, evening, Sam, evening, Ralph, you know, we'd pass each other at yeah. dawn or something
clock,
like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And, yeah, like, he'd be going out. But the funniest thing that ever happened was one night we had the big hot tub in the bathroom.
Yeah. And you know what? He mounted this giant boar's head above the fireplace.
It was a warthog.
I'm sorry, it was a warthog. Which makes it perfectly fine.
It's the one with horns then, or
tusks.
Yeah.
He was not a pet, you know, but...
He was not a pet.
I bought him out of this guy who was a taxidermist. I really loved the fact there was a big old stone fireplace in the bathroom. There was a huge oversized tub with jets and everything, and it was fun just at the end of the day to lie in there and turn the jets on and relax. And one night I'm sitting in there, there's a window behind me, and you can hear sirens going off in the distance, you know, because it's close to the freeway, you know, and there's like a police siren. And these coyotes just start screaming outside my window, you know, like howling, and they're right there. And I'm going, what are you bastards doing? You know, like, you know, peeping in at me. You know, I'm in the bathtub or something, you know. It's fun.
Now, we haven't said one thing about Deuce and Muggs.
Well, no, not really.
They're lying here so peaceful.
Yeah, for the first time, they aren't snoring the entire way through.
No. Well, because they know the content will be about them.
Oh yeah, yes. They're expecting an introduction.
They're wonderful boys.
Yeah, we've had some really good luck with pets. I mean, yeah. You and I specifically.
Yeah.
We had Worf, and
we have to mention our beloved little Worf. Yeah. He was our first Boston Terrier.
Our little guy. I remember when we rescued him.
Oh.
He was so excited, and I mean, Worf was like Paul's baby. Yeah. That was his boy.
Imagine.
And I mean, all three dogs have been daddy's kids.
Yeah.
But I mean, I remember when we rescued him, we saw his picture online and we were like, oh, you know, we were thinking about getting a dog, and we'd contacted the rescue and they said, well, why don't you take a look at the pictures online? And we saw this picture of this little dog.
It looked like a little
Paul
gremlin.
Was just like, oh my. And his name was Worf, and we just thought, oh, and so we contacted them and said,
so he was already named Worf.
Oh yeah.
Oh, that's nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they arranged a meet and greet at the tar pits, and they said, come on and see him. So we got up there and we were so excited. We were so excited. Yeah. And we got there, and I will never forget the first time Paul spotted him. He grabbed my arm and he goes, I see him.
He saw this little sassy Boston Terrier leading its foster mother over, and he was like pulling at the harness, and I was so excited because I knew he was there for us.
Yeah, and he was such a good boy. And then Betty brought him. Betty was his foster mom, and she's this amazing, awesome lady. She's just beautiful.
Yeah.
And she brought him over, and the first thing he did when she brought him, when he was moving in here, was he jumped out of the car, ran out, and peed on the tree. And Paul said, he's home.
He's home.
He knows this is his house. Yep. He's marking it. He's
here we go. Awesome. I'm good.
Mm-hmm. And he was with us for just a little under a year.
Yeah. Aww.
And then he got real sick, and we took him in for surgery, and they did a surgery that he didn't really need, but they said would help. He was having congestive heart failure because he was just a little old dude.
Yeah.
And he was so sweet. He was just the best dog.
Yeah.
And we took him in, and they did a surgery that was kind of elective, but they said would help.
Yeah.
And it killed him.
Yeah,
he never
recovered.
They reduced his palate, and they cut it too short.
Oh.
And so what happened was, the surgery, they said, went great, but every time he ate, the food went right down into his lungs because he didn't have that separation air tube and esophagus.
Yeah.
And so they just called us in the middle of the night and said that he had passed away. It was horrible because they said he was okay. And then they were showing me his x-rays, and they said, well, as you can see, the pneumonia is progressing. And I said, no, as you can see, the microchip is on the wrong side. You've got his x-ray backwards.
Ooh.
And the doctor just looked at me kind of white. And I said, what's going on? Because they were trying to tell us to put him down. And we wouldn't. And we kept him in
the
oxygen.
They screwed up the surgery, and you knew how to read an x-ray.
And they didn't know that I knew how to read an x-ray. And I was nice about it at first, but they killed our dog.
Yeah.
And it was the saddest, hardest thing. And $7,500 later,
yeah,
they finally admitted that was what it was. Yeah. And they said, well, we'll knock 10% off since it was our fault.
Good. Give us
Thanks.
100% of our dog back, please.
Yeah.
You know.
But I mean, it was just, they couldn't believe that we were as committed to keeping that dog alive, and we loved him as much as we did, you know?
Yeah. He was our baby.
Yeah. So about, excuse me.
Oh, that's all right. That's all right. You know.
About a week
yeah,
after that, Boston Buddies called to express their condolences, and we thanked them very much, and she said, if you consider adopting in the future, and we had looked at the site because, you know, someone said, well, you should get another dog right away, and we said, absolutely not.
Yeah, you need time.
It was just, there was no way.
Yeah.
And it was our first pet together, you know, so it was just like a really weird...
And we had had him for 10 months, but it wasn't nearly enough.
Yeah. You know? Boston Buddies called to express their condolences and said, if you consider adopting, and we had seen a picture of Deuce and Muggsy, and we wanted to begin with, but we didn't want to go whole hog because we didn't know if we could handle it. And I said, well, you know, we saw Deuce and Muggsy, and Rachel, who runs Boston Buddies, just broke down and said, I am sorry. I know you're grieving, but they are miserable. She said these dogs were locked up on a little patio and they're out, but they've never known any dogs but each other. And they're very sweet and they're good dogs, but they can't be around other animals. And they're in a run right now, surrounded by other animals, and they're just throwing themselves up against the cyclone fence and screaming. And they're so stressed out. If you can just foster them.
Yeah.
And she said, just get them out of there. Boston Buddies would be so grateful. And she said, you don't have to adopt. There is absolutely no pressure. And so we went and met them. And I said, well, you know, they don't really look like Bostons because they're big. Mm-hmm. And Worf was so tiny.
Yeah.
And she said, oh, they're Bostons. Yeah. You know, she said, they're definitely Bostons. And we met them. And she said, well, what do you think? And I said, well, they're really sweet. We have to talk about it. And she said, no, they go home with you now or they don't. And so she was just firm, you know. She said, I've got to get them out of here, and if not with you, with someone else.
Yeah, and not permanently, but just, can you foster them for a few weeks until someone's interested, you know, and where we can put them with other foster parents or people who just look after them. Mm-hmm. And we thought, okay, and you know, it's like, and we thought, well, they'll never replace Worf, and they never, you know, they never can in that way. But we drove them home, and we thought, well, you know, Worf was a little guy. These are more like, you know, dogs, and they're fine, and they stayed, you know, with us. And it was a little rocky at first. Deuce got out, you know.
After he got out 3 times. Yeah. Oh. We had the backyard dog proof, but Worf was so good and he was very perimeter trained. I don't think he could see all that well.
No.
And so he wasn't very adventurous, you know, whereas these guys were much younger. Whereas Worf was 12, these guys are like 6.
Yeah.
And so they're like hyper. They'd been traumatized by their stay. Uh-huh. And so they were constantly trying to escape, and they just wanted to be with each other, and they just wanted to be safe. And so they were just looking for a place like their old patio where they could just go. So I had chicken wire around the backyard because we had a gate that was pretty high up off the ground that they sure. could get under, and I had chicken wired that. But I hadn't put any kind of weight there because I never needed it for Worf. Well, I'm standing in the bathroom brushing my teeth one afternoon, and I hear ka-ching ching. Ka-ching ching. And I thought, oh damn it, the dog just got out. Like, I just knew instinctively. And I went out and I ran in front of the house just in time to see the little turkeys turn the corner.
Oh.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, are you kidding me? And I went tearing after them. They saw me running and it freaked them out. So they started running. And they're faster than me.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So I got my wits and I said, okay, they're running because I'm running. Stop.
Yes.
And they'll stop. And I did, and they did, but they jumped up, and there was a car pulling out of a driveway, and they wanted to go for a ride, and they were scratching on the side of this car that's moving, and the lady's like, ah, you know, what is this craziness?
Yeah.
And so I chased them another, I mean, they were about a half mile that I sprinted after these dogs. And which doesn't sound like a lot to some, but when you're scared, it's double time, you know? And so I got them, and I didn't have any leashes. Why would I grab them, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I grabbed both of their collars. I eventually calmed down enough where they came. Muggsy came to me, and Deuce was a little wary.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so Muggsy came right up to me and then flipped on his back in submission. Like, yeah, I'm sorry about that.
Yeah.
And so now I can't get him to move so I can get closer to Deuce. So I'm dragging Muggsy on his back over to grab Deuce. And then they both flipped on their back. And so I'm trying to walk like 2-3 steps and then they flip over.
Right.
And then I'm 2-3 steps and they flip over. And I'm so traumatized and out of breath. I was out of breath for about an hour and a half. I was so scared. And I'm crying and I'm dragging these dogs on their back home. And finally, some nice neighbor said, would you like a ride? I said, can you give me a ride? And she said, no. But if you tell me where their leashes are, I'll go to your house and get them. Uh-huh. And so she did. And I think she actually had leashes in her car. She had one. And so I carried Deuce and she leashed Muggsy for me. And then she followed me in the car and I got them in the house and returned her stuff and thanked her, you know, totally out of breath. And then a couple days later, Deuce got out again. And he got out and ran up the street and just had a freak out session.
Yeah.
And it was raining and I was just screaming, I can't do this anymore. Oh. And
he went after another dog, and but he was like barking at him and nipping at him.
He didn't hurt
him. But it was just traumatic because it's always a little difficult with a rescue dog because I think all dogs want to please, but then you never know what the triggers are that might set it off, and then suddenly you've got a strange dog, even if the dog has been living with you for a few weeks and things are going okay. Suddenly you've got a strange dog on your hands, and you're not sure exactly what set him off. But I really feel that dogs become reflective of their owner's personality, and these guys calm down a lot, and they really did develop separate personalities.
And they're so funny. Like, Deuce is, he's really sassy, you know, and he is little Deuce Dini. I mean, he's very clever, and he's very quick, and he shoot, you know, he's like off like a shot, and he's like a little kid. He loves to snuggle, and he'll curl up, and he does the little, you know, and he like sneaks right in next to you, and he's like your little guy.
Yeah.
Whereas Muggsy is more like a teenager. He's really mellow, and he's chill. And he doesn't really want any trouble. He just wants to hang out, you know? And Deuce wants to play all the time, and Muggsy just wants to relax. And he's like, dude, I don't know why you're so creeped out, you know? And, but they're really together. They love each other so much, and they've become so snuggly and gentle since we've had them. And the dog trainer, we had a dog trainer over several times. First of all, after Deuce got out and had that episode, because I said, no, they need a trainer. And when Boston Buddies called, to wrap that up, Boston Buddies called and said, I have a home for them. And we said, no, their home is here. Because they were with us for a month and a half. And after we got over that, we said, well, what else could happen? Now we know. And we immediately had a trainer here who said, look, these are good dogs. They're smart. They listen and they obey and they know basic commands. This is all they do. A, they're going to get out if you'll let them. And B, they can't be around other animals, but they can be around each other. So if you know that and you're willing to live under those conditions, You've got great dogs.
Yeah, and Boston Terriers really do take on the better qualities of their owners. And they're wonderful companion dogs. And they don't need a lot of work. I mean, you have to be stern with them because they are tricky. And they
they're so smart.
They're very smart.
And Muggsy plays tricks.
Muggsy does play tricks, when we're making the bed
in the morning, Muggsy will jump up on it and flip over. Mm-hmm. And
he just likes to see our reaction.
Yeah. And he'll. Did I ever tell you about Worf and the flank steak?
Oh, same thing with Eustacia, pretty much.
Yeah, it was very close. We came home, and this dog was snuffly grunty because he was a Boston. And these guys have longer muzzles. They're not as brachycephalic as typical Bostons are. Uh-huh. But which just means they have a short kind of nose, and they make that noise because of their short nose and palate. Actually, I think it means that their palate is long. But anyway, we were getting ready, and this dog was very... Worf was very noisy. And Paul was unpacking groceries in the kitchen one day, and had set a bag on the floor, and he turned around and said, where's the flank steak? And we both looked at the doorway just in time to see this little tiny dog with this huge package of steak sticking out on either side of his head.
Oh my goodness.
Just kind of silently, like a little ninja.
Little ninja,
creeping out.
Off he goes.
The kitchen. He was just like, thank you very much. Yeah. But he went through the noisy grocery plastic bag, pulled out the flank steak, and didn't snort, snuffle, snozzle, nothing, and escaped with it. And when Paul took it away from him, hadn't even broken the plastic with his teeth. He was so gentle.
Yeah, it's the hunting instinct. I mean, it does come up every once in a while.
And Muggsy, whenever we go to get something out of the refrigerator, will sit between us and the refrigerator door so we can't close it until he's given something. He feels like he's entitled to that. He's like, you know, I came all the way over here.
Yeah.
The least you could do is abide by a piece of cheese or, you know,
there's
something.
There's a toll for opening this fridge.
Exactly. And that toll is feed me.
And whenever I cook anything, Muggsy sits by the stove.
Chef Muggsy.
Chef Muggsy. He's your sous chef. Just watching and supervising and making sure everything goes right. We are turning into dog people. Well, not as bad as my uncle and his weird little dachshund, but
I love that dog.
Well, that my uncle's
you told us the story.
Maxie,
about the
yeah, Maxie and Moosey. Oh God. Well, the boys are here. Super Egan Rash here in the stable with Hobart. He sleeps out in the stable.
Mm-hmm.
We have a little enclosure for him.
Mm-hmm.
And everything is good.
Everybody loves everybody, and everybody loves you.
Yep. It's good to go out on.
Yeah.
So that's it for this time.
A toast to pets everywhere.
Yeah.
Toast to
pets everywhere. Leave us iTunes reviews, everyone.
Yeah.
And questions. Well, let me see. Yeah, do we have any questions that came through this week?
If we did, we'll answer them next time. This is the longest podcast ever.
Ever. Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
So thanks for listening.
Good night.
Good night.
Bye.